This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Mercedes-Benz, Bosch, Osram, well-known German brands which have a regional presence in this country. Just a few of the 700 German companies that operate here. So it's not surprising that we are Germany's largest trading partner in ASEAN. But will we lose that title? And what more should we do to ensure that bilateral trade grows between us? Questions that we pose to Daniel Birnbeck, CEO of the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Thanks for coming back on The Breakfast Grill. The last round was in 2019. Now, much has changed since then. The whole country, or the whole world actually, has plunged into a crisis with COVID-19. So let's start with the current lockdown that we are in and the ever-changing SOPs. Tell me, what has the feedback been with regards to how the government is handling this crisis among your members?
Yeah, thank you for having me again. Yeah, that's a good question. And of course, it touches to the soft spot of all the business people here, the community, the entrepreneurs. It is typical for small and medium-sized enterprises, small companies that we mostly have here in Malaysia, German companies that are here in Malaysia. Of course, they are struggling if they don't get the right rules and regulations, if there's contradictions or interpretations necessary, or it's not clear which ministry they have to turn to because they are somewhere in the gray zone between one ministry or the other. So that is really a challenge. But as always, it has a flip side, and it is an absolute value proposition for the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce and Industry, our chamber, MGCC, because now then we grow into the role of being the advisor and the explanatory organization to support them and to give them the interpretation they need and also to advocate for their interests. So crisis times is chamber times. We are more than busy.
So what has been their biggest challenge or the biggest challenge for you to help them overcome these confusing times?
I think that the challenges is usually that MCOs, the SOPs for the MCOs come out with a short notice. There is no long transition so that everybody can be prepared. They come out with 48, maybe maximum 72 hours, and companies need to readjust their supply chains. They need to inform their suppliers and their customers. They need to organize the workforce and all that. So it's quite a challenge for them, short notice periods. The second point is that since the beginning of the pandemic, it's always the same kind of routine that we have to first find out what the rules and regulations really say and what they mean. Because it takes some time until we read it, until we can translate it, until all the misinterpretations are cleared out. And only after a few days or even a week, we are quite sure what is the rules now. And that is quite difficult for companies to manage and to navigate.
So aside from time being lost, do the U-turns, which we have seen a few times, does that give you a headache or your members a headache?
Yeah, definitely. It's always the question, so now what? And okay, then again, we have to reorganize, or like the application system for one ministry instead of so many other ministries. And then it goes back to MITI, which is really, MITI is our strongest partner in this whole organization, in this whole process, because they have been working night and day to clear out the issues and the topics and the questions. And we are very much relying on their support to give us the permissions to operate for the companies.
So have you had this conversation with the authorities and given them your feedback? I mean, have you met the Minister of Trade, Datuk Sri Azmin Ali, and said, look, these are the issues that German businesses face, or at least our members face?
Yes. That is a very positive point, honestly, about Malaysia. As much as people complain, and we have a saying in Germany, complain is the saying hello of a merchant.
So we are quite similar then in many ways.
Yes. That's typical for these kind of business cultures. But on the other hand, Malaysia gives us a lot of open channels to communicate to the authorities. You would not see me have a handphone number or an email address of a minister in Germany. But here I do have, and I can approach, and they are very open, and especially senior minister of MITI, Azmin Ali, he's very approachable, very open to listening to the associations and the chambers. And that is giving us comfort. And we can, in a return to the complaints we receive from the business community, we can return to them, yes, let us have your points and we will convey them. And we are sure that the minister and his team will listen.
As we know, attracting trade and foreign direct investment or FDI is so important in this era, right? So what we do know is bilateral trade between Germany and Malaysia was 14.2 billion euros in 2019, slightly lower than what we saw in 2018. And I don't have 2020 figures, but are these numbers actually growing?
No, in 2020, it dropped to almost 13 billion flat. And it is, of course, an impact of the disrupted supply chains. But if you look at it in more details, you can see that there was more significant drop from the exports from Germany to Malaysia than it was from Malaysia to Germany. Because you mentioned a few names, but I would also add B. Braun as one of the medical devices manufacturer in Penang. They are very strong right now because if you look at the vaccination campaigns around the world, or even only take Germany, 75% of the syringes that are used for vaccination in Germany come from Penang. And we also have Schott Glass. They are producing these vials for the vaccines. 80% of the world receives Schott Glass vials from Penang. So that's really huge. And Malaysia plays an important role on the supply chains. With the help of ministries and authorities to allow them to operate, we could stay on that supply chain quite strongly with only a small decline in the whole year of 2020.
At the end of the day, Malaysia is still Germany's major trading partner in ASEAN, which I mentioned earlier, but clearly neck to neck with Singapore and Vietnam, which is catching up closely. Now, what do we need to stay ahead of what is honestly an FDI race and remain the gateway to ASEAN for German companies?
Of course, it's quite a sensitive topic to talk about Singapore here in Malaysia. And I would honestly say Singapore is a different setup. It's a country or a state that it really goes towards high tech and very low labor intensive jobs and research and development and all that. Malaysia, with a manufacturing background and space that we have for setting up companies and manufacturing plants, I think our competitors are more like Indonesia, Thailand, and as you mentioned, Vietnam. What Malaysia has to offer is fundamental benefits or fundamental aspects that are really positive. And that is, first of all, a common law system that Europe is familiar with. And that's not the case in Indonesia and Thailand and Vietnam so much. So German companies, investors in Vietnam are reporting quite difficulties with understanding the rule of law in the country. Second is language. I think Malaysia should put a lot of focus on keeping up good English language command in the population, because that is absolutely crucial for being competitive, being approachable and open to foreign investors. That language then is, of course, infrastructure, 5G. We have to be stronger and faster in internet connection. By the way, Malaysia is doing much better than Germany because we have a lot of issues with connectivity in Germany, but in Malaysia it's strong, but it needs to stay up strong and it has to go into the next generation of internet infrastructure and all that. And the rest is, of course, and I hope we will come to that, it is skilled labor. It is the upskilling of the workforce. It is, especially on the vocational training side, we need to invest into upskilling the workforce, making them ready to adjust to the ever-changing and very dynamically changing industrial environment. Industry 4.0 is one of the buzzwords. And we as companies, as chambers, we have to be engaged in order to really make sure that the young talents learn the skills they need to be able to keep up with the high pace of changes in the technology.
But Daniel, as usual, the trillion-dollar question: what can we do better?
It is a bit the red tape. It is the administrative hurdles, the bureaucracy, the sometimes intransparent processes. Malaysia has come a long way to also looking at Singapore, how they do it, because they are one of the top ranks in the ease of doing business in the world. Malaysia has started doing a lot of applications online. But still, companies face issues and they ask us to help out because from overseas, sometimes they don't understand why things are not moving, why they don't get replies to their emails, why there is nobody picking up the phone, why do the applications be rejected without any reason. And then after waiting weeks for and months for the approvals, suddenly it's rejected. And the only way we can tell them, just reapply. And then they reapply with the same set of documents and it gets approved. So it looks like, oh, it's not really predictable. It's not really transparent what's going on. Was it rejected? Why was it approved?
I want to know, do your members have comments with regards to the current political situation? Because recently, Fitch Solution actually came out with a commentary that says that our short-term political risks have actually risen. Do your members cite that as something that they are concerned about?
My members are mostly 80%, I would say, small and medium-sized enterprises. They are very risk-averse. They are very sensitive to changes or risks in their environment. One of them could be a political risk. But on the other hand, they are more concerned if there would be riots on the streets or instability and police patrolling. And imagine just Myanmar. That is a nightmare for every business person. And also a military coup would be something that German companies and entrepreneurs would be very sensitive to. At the moment, I would say, they would say, look, this is Malaysia's decision. Of course, when the state of emergency came, we were a bit concerned because it sounded like something like 1969 in Malaysia. So we were like afraid that this signal would be creating a bit of unrest or insecurity in the population. But it turned out it is more like something that is a bit distant. It is not intending it's not really involving the day-to-day lives of people. And that's why they are not so concerned, I would say.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning is Daniel Birnbeck, CEO of the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce and Industry. When we come back, a deep dive on TVET. Is that the way to go for Malaysia? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Daniel Birnbeck, CEO of the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Just a moment ago, we were discussing what is the number one challenge for a German company to operate in this country. I think we need to go back to COVID-19. And do German companies find it confusing in terms of the vaccination rollout program? And then, you know, you have news that some states are carrying out their own vaccination. Have they come to you and said, this is all very confusing?
Yes, they have. And they are very concerned because they see the rise in numbers and the members that we represent, because we also represent Malaysian companies, have strongly supported our survey and our question to whether they would be willing to engage in a public-private partnership approach that was initiated also by MITI to see whether the industry would be getting involved. We are very hopeful that there will be a rollout of this kind of partnership, because I know that in Germany and other countries, companies get involved, their local medical support divisions in the factories get involved in vaccinations, and they get also involved in testing to make sure that inside the factory there is no clusters or hotspots, so that they really can corner the virus and can delete it from their premises. Of course, they always complain about being scolded or being punished for infections in the premises that they find out because they test. But they find out that these infections come from the society, from the outside, from the after-work connections, not from inside of the factory. And they feel like they are not guilty of spreading. But that's how the authorities sometimes operate, and the companies come to me and say, what can you do to support us? Can we import vaccines from Germany? Can we have private imports? And we learned that Ministry of Health says there is no way private imports can be allowed, and also private administration vaccines cannot be allowed. So I think, and we hope, that there will be more flexibility on that side in order to make the herd immunity happen earlier than 2022. We would like to see it second half of the year, because we believe that only with a strong campaign or strong rollout of vaccinations, we will be able to battle the pandemic.
Yeah, and talking about flexibility, what is the feedback with regards to the actually rather inflexible human resource law regarding the hiring and even the rehiring of foreign talent under the My Future Jobs program? I mean, what is your feedback?
When it came in the earliest days of this year, we were quite shocked that because it also included entrepreneurs, owners of companies, when they were reapplying for an extension of their work permit, they were supposed to involve My Future Jobs or SOXO to offer their own job as an owner of a company to a local. That is, of course, the last step you want to see if you're an investor and you have invested your private money, and then suddenly you're supposed to hand it over on a short notice to somebody else simply because you want to renew your passport or your visa. But also, again, what I said earlier, the authorities were taking up our complaints and our suggestions and our worries, and they were listening. And then the system was a bit softened at those edges, so it is only applicable now for the certain group of people that are in lower ranking positions in offices. It's not for the manager or top manager or owners. It is not for existing hires and where they just simply need to extend the visa. It is only applicable to new hires. And that is, of course, acceptable because that is something that countries all around the world are doing, because all of the countries face unemployment rates. Mm. And I have to do something about getting their own population into work. That's quite a natural reaction of a government, so we don't complain about this.
Okay, and interestingly, one of the key initiatives of the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce and Industry is actually implementing TVET training and educational projects. Now, we know that our government, Malaysian government, has allocated $6 billion to TVET. Now, I want to know, what could you as a chamber contribute towards this? Because this is something we want to move forward and we seem to have the budget, but are we doing it well?
I think, if I may say so, with all due respect, no, the Malaysian program is, or the existing traditional Malaysian vocational and technical education is driven or run by government institutions. It's coming from the government, it's coming from the ministries. It comes from seven ministries, if I have counted them properly. So seven ministries are involved in some sort of technical vocational education and training, which is by itself something like a big overhead.
Confusing, to say the least.
It's confusing, and these ministries are not industry, they are not business, they are not a trade. They are sometimes far away from that, but very strongly involved in that. It's simply a question of expertise and knowledge. What we would say is the better way, and what has been proven successful in Germany and has been exported to countries like the US or China. So it's not that only Malaysia gets the German model or should adopt the German model, but it's also highly developed countries that take over the German model, as it has been proven successful, more successful than other concepts, and especially because of one element. Our technical vocational education and training is industry driven. It is monitored and administered and certified by the chambers. We are the industry representative organization, and it is mainly driven by teachers and coaches from the shop floor. Mm. 75% of the education on the German model is inside the factory. The apprentices get employed on an apprentice scheme in the factory, in the company, so they are part of the workforce. They have the company shirt, they have to report it to work at 7 in the morning, and they are involved in the whole process of a full working life. So they learn it firsthand from exactly what the company wants them to learn and what they need to be able to do once they get hired into a permanent employment. And we have a high employment rate. So we have a high rate of people being employed and permanently employed after the ending of the TVET program. They get permanent employment, so they have over 90% of them get hired and have a permanent job. Whereas when we look at the Malaysian model, it is mostly a train and place. So they are being trained off-site somewhere in the school only from books. They have no idea how the real work looks like. They have not been part of a workforce. And then they should be placed.
Hmm.
So they knock at the door of the factory and then they say, well, so what do you know? Then they hold up a certificate, but they have to start from zero because they have never seen the factory and the machine and the technology. And that leads to a lot of unemployed people that have graduations or have certificates but have nothing to work.
But so, Danny, I'm just curious, have you tried to sell this idea to Malaysian companies so that yes. they provide the training? Are they keen?
They are keen when you talk about the quality and the qualification, but they are not keen to get involved financially because being a training company, you have to have somebody that trains. You have to have people that coach these young apprentices. You have to put working hours of an expert, of a technician that is experienced and has a talent to teach. You have to take him off his productivity and give him a task to teach young apprentices. You have to set up a training lab. You have to do exams. You have to pay the chamber for certifying. All that is not known to the typical Malaysian business person.
Yeah, they only see costs involved, you see.
They see costs and they see it is a role of the government. It is not my role to train. Hmm. Traditionally, it has been that way forever here in Malaysia. So it has been the government that would train and would pay for it. And that's where the 6 billion is necessary. Germany has a much lower per capita, much lower investment on technical vocational education and training. So our model is even much cheaper for the government. But here now, we have been doing it for more than 5 years, 6 years already in this country. Malaysian government has not been willing to invest a single dollar into our program because it always says, yeah, we have our own programs, so we fund them first. Our program has been proven much more successful when it comes to high quality, high tech, and forward looking and industry 4.0 jobs, but we have not been granted any cent. So it's only the participants are mostly German companies, some Americans, some Japanese, very few Malaysian companies.
Mm.
And it is mostly bigger companies that can simply afford it. The majority of the Malaysian industry is SMEs. They are not tapping into it because it's simply costs for them. And that is still an issue.
Now, historically, many Malaysian companies see the UK as the gateway to the European Union. But with Brexit, can Germany take that place? And what are the opportunities there?
I think the most important opportunity is our education system, our higher education system, our universities, because many know that Germany does not charge tuition, high tuition fees like other countries. So it's not fully free of charge. You have to have an application fee, which is 500 euros, which is something like 2,500 ringgit, and then you're good to go. But of course, housing and all the costs that you have. So I would say for young students, it would be a very important option to look at and to consider because it's very easy to go to Germany. And also, we have a lot of curricula now and careers in English, where the language would not be as an obstacle, especially in the technical education and like becoming an engineer. And that is, of course, Germany has one of the or a few of the highest ranked technical schools and universities. So that should be a point to consider. And other than that, of course, Germany is a country that looks for a skilled workforce as well because we have a aging population and everybody that wishes to work in this environment. I think Germany is a perfect country for that. And of course, we are in the EU and the UK has left the EU. And many jobs are moving over from from the UK to Germany, to France and other countries. So Germany is in some areas benefiting from that fact. And I would strongly encourage everybody to contact us because we have an office for student exchange in our chamber's offices. So that is an option that all the parents should consider for their.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Daniel Birnbeck, CEO of the Malaysian German Chamber of Commerce and Industry. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.